101, a version 1 podcast.
I'd like to welcome Ellen Ward to the 101 podcast today. Thanks very much, Ellen, for joining us.
It's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me here.
We're very much looking forward to catching up with you. You have a couple of interesting roles, Ellen. We're going to start off with asking you around your background story.
Yeah, so I'm English, but I've lived here in Dublin since 2001. And I moved over to do a master's and to look for work here. I've always studied. I studied social science, but I work in IT. So I stumbled into IT and I've stayed in that environment for 24 years now. So I work at Concern Worldwide in the IT department there, and I've been there for 11 years. And prior to that, I worked in places like IBM and Accenture, more business focused. But I wanted to make that change across to the nonprofit sector, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that. So I'm kind of motivated by my work at Concern. I really enjoy that work.
Ellen, could you give our listeners a bit of an idea about how Concern impacts the world we live in and then the role that IT plays in that?
The main focus of Concern is reducing poverty, and we work in some of the most fragile and vulnerable countries. Now, there's lots of different ways to do that, but one of the things that has changed over the last few years is the use of cash transfers. So that would be after an emergency or in a time when people don't have access to food. You have the opportunity to obviously transport food and other items like seeds and tools and blankets to a place and distribute them. But more and more what we're seeing is, because people have mobile phones, if it's possible to do, you can actually transfer cash and vouchers to people's phones, which means you don't have to travel. It can be quicker, and as long as the markets are in place and there's food to buy, people will actually be spending the money locally as well. So
that's very impactful.
It is. And it's a way to actually reach more people at scale more quickly. And it also gives people a choice in what they spend the money on. So they're not just given an item, they're given a choice as well, which means that I think it gives people a little bit more.
I suppose it gives people more autonomy in their decisions as well, or...
Yeah, autonomy and choice and a little bit of power back in a situation where really people don't have a whole lot of power if things are, you know, if things are unstable and they've left their home or they're in a different place to where they want to be. Being able to buy food, cook food, or maybe save some of the money or buy school books or shoes or something different, it's been shown to be, you know, really positive way to support people in those difficult situation. So it doesn't work everywhere and it doesn't work for every situation, but it can be, you know, massively useful in the right context. Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about your role at Concern? I imagine it's a very rewarding industry to work in.
It is. I mean, it has its own challenges, but certainly it's great to work for an organization that has values and kind of purpose that you agree with. You know, it makes going to work easier and kind of more fun as well, I guess. We're a great bunch of people. Everyone's very friendly in the office, and although we don't make the big bucks, what we do is something that we really enjoy. So IT at Concern is interesting in terms of having to deal with challenges such as there not being power in all our locations, in our offices and where we work. There's not always internet connectivity. Some people have to travel long distances to pick up mobile connections. And we work with lots of different types of people in different environments. So the normal IT that you would use in a normal office won't always work where we are. So that makes it interesting as well.
And I know with Concern Worldwide, there's a huge focus on IT. And I think a lot of people wouldn't be necessarily as familiar with that as you would imagine, Ellen. Could you maybe give some, I suppose, examples of how Concern, I suppose, supports IT across the world?
Well, like any organisation, we need to speak to each other. So we have the normal things like email. We use a lot of tools that you might not think about. So in order to understand how our work is impacting people and communities, we have to capture data about our programmes. It might be any kind of data. But previously, we would have used paper to do that. And about 8 years ago now, we moved across to collecting data digitally, which again sounds simple, but when you don't necessarily have connectivity, you need to be able to do that offline. So IT would have been involved, and my colleagues and myself would have been involved in that, which was very interesting to do in 26 or 27 countries. We've worked with, as I say, because of power issues, we've worked with solar power and creating different ways to charge mobile phones, and having personal lights that we've kind of developed so that children could do homework and things like that, which wouldn't be a normal IT kind of thing to do. And we use maps in quite interesting ways and satellite imagery. So there's quite a variety of different tech involved, and that's probably something not everybody knows about, but yeah, certainly something we are doing every day.
It sounds like you've deployed a lot of innovation to your IT activities in concern, depending on the level of connectivity in each country. What does it look like? What does your role look like in terms of the day-to-day? And imagine it's very broad, Ellen.
Yes. Now, I would say most jobs in IT, if you're lucky, are quite varied. You know, if you're a project manager like I have been, you tend to move from project to project. And so you have different, you learn different things on each project. And we work in that way. We also are lucky enough to talk to other NGOs and share information with them. So although we can't necessarily all do the amount of innovation we want to do, we can share ideas with each other. And there's quite a lot of, sharing and cross-pollination of ideas. So innovation is important, but we also have to be very careful to keep delivering our services all the time, and make, you know, we can't take huge risks, so we have to be
very careful.
Of course,
you have to balance keeping the lights on for such an important organisation with advancing with technology.
Yeah, so that's part of the challenge, I think, making sure that you're up to date with things like AI and machine learning and blockchain, and you know, you can test out some of those things and you can try out some of those things in environments, but you have to be sure that you're getting the results you want before you'd kind of scale anything up too big, because when you have something that works, you need to kind of maintain that stability as well.
You've worked in concern for 11 years now, Ellen. What would you say your career highlight has been in concern to date?
There's been lots of great projects, and I've learned a lot, but traveling to a concern program is always, you know, really valuable, because you get to meet new people and see the work that's happening. I've only traveled a little bit, but I've been to Malawi and our India office before we closed our India office. And in both countries, I met some lovely people. But Malawi was particularly interesting because we traveled not far out of the city, but to where people are growing crops. And we got to see some of the methods that we've been training farmers to use in action with in the fields, and also see things like water pumps to bring water from the river up to the fields. We were taken down to see one, but told not to lean too far into the water because there were crocodiles. So the farmers would have great fun telling you all these stories and introducing you to local food to try, and trying to make you laugh or dance with them, or take photographs and things like that. So it's fantastic if you get to visit a concern program, that's definitely a perk of the job.
It must be amazing to be able to meet the people at the other side of your work face to face.
No, it is. And it doesn't, you know, unfortunately, you know, we can't all travel constantly, but when it does happen, when there's a reason to go somewhere, you always come back with more than you thought you would get out of it, definitely from the people you meet.
I definitely imagine so. In terms of worthwhile work and using your work to impact the world, to make a real difference, I know that in your personal time as well, you're involved in a Tech for Good initiative. Could you give us a little bit of background on how you actually got involved with Tech for Good?
Yeah, it was a bit unexpected, really. I was only on Twitter for a very short time. I don't use social media a huge amount, but I was introduced to another person in Dublin who was also tagging things with Tech for Good tags, and actually three of us were put in touch, and it was suggested by a Tech for Good kind of champion over in the US that we could start a group in Dublin, which was a very random thing to suggest, but the perfect thing, really, for us to try. So myself and Maureen Murray met for a coffee after being set up on Twitter and thought, well, this sounds like fun. Let's just give it a go. So we started a Tech for Good group in Dublin with no budget and no model to follow. It's all very free form. You kind of do what you want in the different cities and countries around the world.
So you weren't following a specific kind of template for the meetup from other countries?
Not really, no. In the first year, we wanted to see how it would develop. We kind of saw great potential in Dublin, but if there wasn't going to be interest, we would, you know, just call it a day. So we kind of spent the first year learning about what was happening in Dublin and running events. And then at the end of the first year, we kind of understood really what we'd been doing. And we, you know, kind of wrote some value statements and put together a website and things to make it clearer what we were all about. But at the start, yeah, it was very much an experiment.
And what does that look like actually now in terms of the typical meetup and what the initiative does and what your remit is?
Well, we're now in our third year. On the meetup, there's 1,500 and something members.
Wow.
And people find us through there or through Eventbrite for events. We generally come up with an idea for a theme. It might be mental health or homelessness or tech for building communities or the environment. And then we kind of go out and find speakers. And people have been really generous with their time. They will, you know, someone who's working on a project who has an experience in the area that we're interested in will come along to the event and speak about what they know. And we might have two or three speakers on a theme and time then for everyone to network with each other, eat donuts normally, ask questions. And we also have time for the people in the room to talk about their own work or ask for help if they're working on a project. So we get a real variety of people coming along. They're not by any means all techies. We have a real age range and a real variety of people. So it makes for great conversation in the room. And it's meant that we haven't run out of ideas. We haven't run out of people.
Well, I imagine there is an infinite number of problems to solve in the world. So ideas probably are never at a shortage.
No, I don't think so. And the more you dig, the more you find, certainly, because meeting one interesting person who's worked on something, they'll introduce you to someone else. And all of a sudden, you're kind of involved in other groups and with other. There are lots of groups who are making change in Dublin in different ways, and a lot of them overlap with what we do. So we've met some great other people who will share resources and will come to our events and we'll go to their events. And then people start to say, oh, well, you can have a discount for tickets for members. And you realise that actually there is kind of an ecosystem of change makers who have this kind of social impact focus and are tackling it in slightly different ways. And so there's loads of opportunity to get involved.
Would you say that there was a huge appetite for people to get involved, or was it a slow build to where you are now? Or were you surprised with the results you had when you first started inviting guests along? And what type of guest are you targeting to kind of come along and help? Is it people who are technical, you know, at a developer level, or is it more open than that?
Look, most of our speakers are working on some kind of project, and quite often it's a sort of personal mission that they've discovered something they want to do. You know, they're solving a problem themselves. It might be in early stages of building it, or it might be a product. I mean, we had Food Cloud to come and talk about their product, which is well established. But, you know, it's a really interesting model, and it's an Irish example for people to see how they, you know, went, what stages they went through. And a lot of the stories have interesting elements where, you know, they may have taken a turn or changed the platform they're going to use or changed the tech they're going to use. So those stories are kind of informative and very positive for people to see. We also try and we'd like to build skills in technology. So we run workshops whenever we can. So we have people who bring in virtual reality headsets for people to try and immerse themselves in experiences. We've done some work with design thinking, which is a really useful skill if you're trying to problem solve and you want to think about the eventual user of the solution that you're building. We've done digital mapping, which was something I had done at Concern. And it's a volunteer-based open source mapping solution for unmapped areas. And so we ran one of those workshops. So it's also about taking away some of the mystery about technology and making people feel that it's something they can get involved in. You don't have to be an expert. It's accessible for people. And we did a app building workshop as well. And people That's got really to see how you could do that at home with free tools and someone volunteered to share their skill that way. So it's very, there's always something, you know, something you can take away and try at home as well. So that's great.
It sounds very tangible and practical, I suppose, in terms of, it sounds like you're kind of enabling the guests to really pick up some skills at the workshops, as well as maybe speaking at a high level and sharing people's stories.
We'd like to be able to do both. And, in a third thing, really, to connect people to each other, so that when someone's sort of stuck with a marketing strategy or, someone to test code or, those kind of things, that people can ask for that help as well. Because a lot of people are working in small teams and they don't necessarily have big budgets, you know, to go and hire people to help. So, and there's quite a lot of that volunteering going on in Dublin. You just don't always see it, you know.
It sounds like you've had a lot of interesting topics and speakers to date. Was there a particular topic that stood out to you so far, Ellen, or a particular speaker that was very memorable?
I think as we've learnt more about what's happening, we've actually come back more than once to virtual reality, and augmented reality is an area where we really didn't realise all the different uses and how much social and personal impact VR can have. So we've had speakers on a variety of topics. We had a guy who was a geography teacher who felt some of his students didn't engage with the coursework when it was based on textbooks, and he couldn't fly them all out to the cliffs of Moher to see the landscape that he was describing. But by bringing virtual reality tools into the classroom, he was able to show them these places and these natural features and, you know, volcanoes erupting. And he could see that, you know, different types of learners and visual learners were getting more engaged, and that the whole classroom was kind of, you know, benefiting from a virtual reality approach to geography teaching.
That's very transformative for the classroom. I imagine a lot more heads would be perking up if they were able to engage in VR as opposed to the book.
Exactly. You can see it. You can feel it. And he's actually working in that area now. He's not a teacher anymore. It's his job to go and fly drones and collect content and try and make these, you know, these immersive experiences for students.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So that's one use, but it's also being used. I mean, VR has been used in the nonprofit sector to build empathy. So there's been some really great videos taken of people in difficult situations, like queuing for food in a camp or running for shelter in a war zone. And by watching those, and it's been used on the street, you know, with the general public, the reaction for a lot of people can be that they really, you know, feel quite moved by it and quite connected to the subject, the person that whose life they're briefly involved in. So those videos are really interesting. And then again, you know, it can be used to help you with learn to meditate or to reduce stress. And some of the headsets can kind of monitor and measure how you're responding during a meditation session and which things make you calm.
That's really interesting, because when I think of VR, I think of more of the action games I've played, or more of the high energy side of VR. I wouldn't have thought of the relaxing elements that it could have as well.
Yeah, no, it can be very relaxing. I tried one on, I think it was a walk around the botanical gardens, and even though I wasn't there, you know, you could kind of decide which path you want to walk down. And there are so many uses that we're only just really touching on a few of them. And I think big topics like artificial intelligence and VR, we'll probably come back to more than once, because we'll keep discovering new people who are using the technology in clever ways. So, but yeah, that was a really, really interesting topic to look at.
It's always great to get involved at a local level with tech initiatives. Is there anything that people in Dublin can do to get involved with Tech for Good? Are you open to a lot more attendees? And would you have any advice for anyone coming along to the sessions?
Oh, definitely. The more people that come, the more people we can work with and listen to and talk to. We would love our members to offer to speak at events or tell us about a friend of theirs who's working on something. The main thing with Tech for Good is to look at what technology can do to help solve problems. And that could be in your workplace. It could be helping an older relative to get information online, being aware of your rights and your human rights in relation to technology, and kind of standing up for those, there's a lot of different ways to get involved, but of course, come to an event. By all means, come to the event that interests you, or email us with ideas for events as well. And there are groups in the UK as well. I mean, I'm on a Slack group with some of the other group leaders, and there's one in, I think it's Southwest, so Bristol area, and there's groups in London and Brighton, I think. So they're kind of popping up all over the place. So, and actually anyone can start one as well. So if anyone wanted to start their own Tech for Good group, that would also be a big way to make an impact, I think. And, you know, one day we'd love to have a whole day event in Dublin, do something bigger, collaborate with other groups. There's a lot of potential. It's just, you know, we're still figuring out our plans, but there's lots we can do.
I certainly know on a voluntary basis, it's all incremental and depending on your members and how much you can get done. Yeah.
No, it is. And I think, you know, we have a planning session a couple of times a year, and we've got some great ideas for the future. And hopefully our members can come along on a journey and be involved in the parts that interest them and step up and talk about this with their friends as well, and let them know that really, you know, the news can be quite scary, and we can read an awful lot about the negative impacts of technology and you know, that really we are all stakeholders in technology. It's these days, you know, it's not just big tech companies that have the power to make change and to build things and to test things and work on with technology. It's much more accessible now. And we should sort of embrace that whenever we can and take back a bit of the power and have a bit of influence and be change makers ourselves. So really, if that's happening, it's good for everybody, because we're not just passive consumers of technology. We're much more involved in the evolution and the kind of direction of where technology is going in the future too.
And I don't think technologists even know how much of the power is in their hands and how much they can affect change, probably until they go to an initiative like Tech for Good and they realise the problems that they can solve and the application of their technology skills, what that can actually impact in the world.
So bringing groups of people together where people who understand the problems and can help to build the solutions. The techie might be one or two people in the group, but they might not be leading. They're actually following other people who work and sometimes as volunteers or community members or understand where the problems are. And techies may not come across that in their day job because it's quite structured and their employer tells them what the direction is. Whereas, you know, it's much more freestyle and free form and can be really kind of engaging work to work on a volunteer project outside of your day job. So we've seen a lot of that. We've seen a lot of people come along and say, you know, I have mad skills, but I'm not using them all in the way that I want to. So maybe if I come to a few of your meetings, I'll find a way to do something that really matters to me.
And apply them for something that's very personally rewarding as well.
Yeah, or something for your community or for your planet. You know, there's so much we can do to reduce waste and to be more sustainable. And a lot of tech is, you know, is useful in that sense as well. So we all have our things we care about. And it's quite likely that you'll find that there's someone building a tech tool to try and, you know, try and help with that as well.
And where can our listeners find out more information about Tech for Good, Ellen?
We have a website, techforgooddublin.org, which talks about all our previous events. So we'll give you an idea of what we've discussed in the past and our values as a group. The events will pop up on Meetup and Eventbrite. And so they're all free events. So you can share that link, obviously, with your friends. We have a Twitter account as well, where you'll hear bits and bobs as we throw them up there. So
great. And as you mentioned as well, there are groups available regionally in the UK as well. So we encourage our listeners to check those out. Thanks, Ellen, for joining us today on the 101 podcast. And best of luck in the future with your work in both Concern Worldwide and Tech for Good Dublin.
Thanks, Roisin. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.